The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Thursday. Sure happy it's Thursday. The end of another week, almost. Tomorrow's Powhana Friday. The Dow Industrials had a really good morning. They opened about 150 points up today. And then President Obama opened his mouth, and the Dow went down and closed 88 points down. Basically, his budget that he announced today it's more deficit spending. The government is spending more money than it takes in. In fact, just in rough numbers, Barack Obama is proposing spending twice as much money as they're taking in taxes. And this does not strike me as a way to deal with the long-term financial health of the country. And I know his apologists are out there saying, well, he's inherited this terrible situation, and he's got to spend money the way they did in World War II because we're in a crisis situation now. Well, I'm sorry, but the crisis situation that we're in now is from reckless government spending. And this is like saying, you know, if the house is on fire, let's throw gasoline on it and hope that the blast will extinguish everything. And it really doesn't. We are taxed too much because the government wants to spend way too much. And Barack Obama is still out there talking war with Iran. He's talking about even after they officially bring home all of our troops from Iraq, they're still going to be combat enablers in Iraq carrying on combat operations. This is that sort of funny language that we had before with Vietnam when they called them the advisors. You know, the advisors are in Vietnam. We're not calling them the soldiers because that implies that they're killing people and people are shooting back at them, which they were anyway. But we're going to call them advisors. That was the Vietnam era. Now we're going to call them enablers. It's the same thing. It's your son or your daughter in a badly fitting uniform holding a piece of military hardware from the lowest bidder out there breathing depleted uranium dust for no reason that anybody can figure out at all. And the bottom line is with the government getting ready to spend twice as much money as they're taking it in taxes, it gets back to that situation that if we just cut out this psychotic need to go around the world killing brown people, that we could live within our means. The government could live within its means. It could keep all of its social spending on the taxes it's collecting now. We wouldn't have all that money going to military. The money would circulate back through the economy, creating jobs and products. See, that's the problem with military spending. First of all, it's hideously wasteful. We've all heard the jokes about, you know, $50 hammers and $700 toilet seats and all the rest of it. And it's not like the hammer or the toilet seat is all that good. It's going through all the processing and all the layers of bureaucracy that make these things that expensive. And it's just a way of grinding up the money. If you ever go back and read the theory and practice of oligarchical collectivism, and yes, it actually does exist. George Orwell, when he wrote 1984, he went out and he actually wrote Theory and Practice of Oligarchical Collectivism. That's the book that nobody was supposed to be reading in their society. And he says right in there, the whole purpose of war is to grind up work product so that people are kept working, but they're kept poor. And therefore, they can be kept controlled. And that's what all this military spending is all about. We're a very productive society. And we could build for ourselves a wonderful quality of life. We already did. At one point, we had the highest standard of living in the world. But that made us too independent thinking and too uppity. So the government has to force us back down into poverty. And that's what taxes and war and military spending are supposed to do. And Barack Obama's going right along with it. His budget from this morning is, I'm going to spend $2 for every $1 you give me to run the government. And somewhere down the road, you will pay me back that extra dollar plus accruing interest. I mean, the government's already dumped $30,000 worth of tax debt onto all of us since in the last 6 months. And no sign of stopping. Here's another trillion they're adding to the pile. And it just goes on and on and on and on with no end in sight. I'm gratified that Barack Obama has such a high opinion of we Americans that he thinks somehow, if we're just left to our own devices, we'll somehow come up with all this money on our own. Maybe they think we've really got it. It's hidden on our mattress or buried under the rose bush out back. And we're just being selfish and unpatriotic by not digging it up and sending it into the government right now. I don't know what he's thinking, because to tell from the outside, he's not making a whole heck of a lot of sense. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Sean in Alberta. Aloha, Sean. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, actually, I was just reading a audio blog or whatever on the Internet on a YouTube or whatever. I was listening to it. And it was talking to this guy, Raid Jar, I'll spell his last name for J-A-R-R-A-R. The guy, the way he spelled the guy's last name. And he was just talking about how, basically, the Bush administration appointed five people to be elected in to head up their government.
Yes.
And then there's the lower, I guess, the Senate, I guess it would be called, that's basically Iraqi elected.
Mm-hmm.
And there he signed, like, Bush got the people that he appointed as their government to sign a treaty that allows them to be there indefinitely.
Yes.
Like, as far as occupation.
It's an installed puppet government, yes.
Yeah.
And they want us to leave.
Yeah. And at the end of the blog, basically what the guy was saying is that, like, all the Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq, are getting pissed off at the United States being there, occupying their countries, and basically saying, no, we're not leaving. We need to be here to help you.
Well, like, yeah. I mean, nobody likes an occupier. I mean, it's absolute nonsense for the U.S. to go along trying to pretend to everybody that the people of Iraq love having us there. Obviously,
yeah,
that's not the case.
They hate us. They don't like us.
They're shooting our people.
Because we kill all their friends and family for no apparent reason. Like,
we blow up their sheep.
Yeah, we blow up everything and think that it's okay to do that. And it's not. I'm a Canadian personally, and I'm a patriot. I love Canada and all, but I don't think that Canada or the States or any country for that matter has the right to go to any country and be telling them what to do.
I agree.
Each
absolutely.
Country is capable of governing their own country, and if they have a problem with another country, that's their problem. It's not ours. There's no reason for us to get involved unless they bring it to our home soil. Right? If they bring
that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. And you are as wise a man as George Washington, because he said exactly the same thing in his farewell address.
Yeah. If there's a country committing acts of terror that aren't faked, like 9/11, on our home soil, then yeah, absolutely, bring it to them too. Right? That's when military force is needed. But to go and, oh, we're going to help you with your parliament and your religion problems, when there was no violence, there was no terrorist acts in Iraq before 2001 when U.S. occupied them.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. The U.S. has manufactured every excuse to go in there. We still don't know what the real agenda was. You know, we're certainly not getting our money's worth in oil out of Iraq. It would have been cheaper for us to just buy all of Iraq's oil than
to
conquer.
Go there and take anyway. That's their
oil. I mean, the point I'm making is...
I don't know if Bush was trying to start a world war. Obviously, that's what he's doing. He needs him and his friend, the Rockefellers, or whatever their name is, to get some more money that they don't deserve for, like, stuff that they don't deserve it for.
Well, I agree with you, and certainly right now, if you look at our current situation financially in the United States, I mean, the U.S. had a crash in 1904 that they didn't pull out of until World War I. We had the crash of 1929, we didn't pull out of until World War II. Now we've got the crash of 2008, and already they're thinking, well, if we can get a good war going, then we'll just pull out of this depression as well. We don't mind trading the blood of our children for gold in our pockets. And, you know, it does seem that this may be the main motive, and it doesn't matter who they start the war with, or even if they win or lose, they just see it as erasing a lot of bad debt and getting everybody working again.
I'm not much of a person to support vigilante stuff.
Yep.
You know something? In all honesty, someone needs to assassinate all of those people.
I don't know about all of them,
friend.
Bush's history. Bush's history, you know, I can't sit here. Well, yes, he does. Yes, he does. Anyway, Sean, we're coming to the end of the segment here, so I'm going to have to let you go here. But thank you very much for the call in. And you are absolutely right. You know, the situation here, we've got a few greedy individuals who are just wrecking life for everybody else on the planet. And they seem to get this idea that if they've got enough money, that makes them gods. And they are therefore allowed to act like it. I don't agree with that. And it's a big problem. And they seem to be starting a war because they can't think of anything else to do. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got callers waiting on the line before we get to them, though. A little story came out here today. Two more money managers in New York, New Wall Street fraud, were arrested today. And basically, you know, this is part of the whole swindler's list thing, where we have, first of all, Bernie Madoff, and now Alan Stanford, and now these two individuals. And I'm looking at this thing, I'm beginning to wonder, what if all of this investment brokering industry has, over the last 10 years or so, what if it's all become one giant scam? Because just stop and think for a minute. United States has lost its manufacturing gradually over the last 30 years, especially over the last 8 years. We don't make products to sell. Where's the money coming from that all these brokerages are making? And yes, they buy into each other's operations, and they move a lot of money around, but where is the wealth supposed to be coming from that these guys are going out and buying their very lavish lifestyles? And I started thinking about all this day trading stuff and all these online brokerage firms where they want to get you in there and you start buying and selling stocks online. And it's sold as a fashion accessory. They don't talk about potential for earnings. They don't talk about losses. But, hey, I'm hip. I'm able to buy and sell stocks on my cell phone wherever I go. And am I not hip and trendy and fashionable? And you begin to wonder if maybe when we lost our manufacturing, and we couldn't actually make money by making products anymore, that over time everybody started saying, well, we got to play a little bit of this, pull the money in, and we use the new money to pay off the old investors, and we'll fix it when the economy gets better. And the economy doesn't get better, and then they're trapped, and they just keep going. And they use their political pull to keep the Securities Exchange Commission and FINRA from investigating them, which is what we have seen happen. SEC let Bernie Madoff go for like 12 years, even with complaints coming in from people like Harry Markopoulos. We're finding out now that two of Alan Stanford's staffers had advisory positions with FINRA, the very group that's supposed to be keeping an eye on them. And I'm beginning to wonder if the entire Wall Street system has itself become this giant con artist swindling machine, because they've been showing all these profits over the last several years in a country that doesn't really have anything for sale. It doesn't make sense that they could still go on making all of this huge amount of money off of the earnings of the companies whose stock they sell if those companies themselves aren't making and selling as much as they did 10, 20 years ago. So something is very much out of kilter, and I think maybe the reason the SEC and FINRA weren't prosecuting any of these guys before Bernie Madoff did his confession that triggered this whole crisis is that the problem is so widespread they didn't want to call attention to it. And now the genie is out of the bottle, and it's all starting to unravel, we may find that a lot of these companies, including the ones that are beginning getting all these bailouts, that they've all been operating these little con artist games, these pyramid schemes. It's rather just something to think about. It's certainly possible. Can't rule it out. Anyway, we're going to go to the phones. We're going to go to Clarence in Oklahoma. And Clarence, aloha. Welcome to the show. And what is on your mind today?
Well, I just thought I'd let you know that I, from your earlier caller, you know, said, well, go out and assassinate these people. Wrong thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you why.
Please do.
A little bit of history here right quick. I'll let you get to the other callers. John Kennedy was killed for a couple of reasons, but they got a twofer when they killed him. And one was thinking he was really president, and he was going to go after the Federal Reserve and issue United States notes and break up the CIA and get out of, do a lot of things that the powers that be didn't want done.
Yes.
Lee Harvey Oswald, I don't care. He probably didn't fire the shots. I've been there. I've been to I've looked through the window next to it.
Yes, so have I.
And it can't, no. I was in the Air Force. I was a fired expert. You don't shoot somebody going away from you when they made the other turn there, when they were coming right, toward the building.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you make your shot because your target only gets larger. You can't miss.
Yes.
And then plus there was a tree in the way, so that's another thing. But they also used that to crack down on guns.
Yes.
Remember, they passed more restrictive gun control legislation after
yes.
that. So, I mean, they just won all the way around the powers that be did.
Yes, they did. And you know the giveaway on all of that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
When they put the Warren Commission together, Alan Dulles, who was the CIA director Kennedy had fired, got to be on the committee investigating his assassination. And John J. McCord, I think his name was.
McCoy.
Basically, McCoy. The president of the Chase Manhattan Bank was on the Warren Commission. I'm sorry. The Chase Manhattan Bank does not have a reputation for solving murders and crimes and assassinations. Why was he even on there? Unless they were dealing with the financial ramifications of reversing Kennedy's executive order on the U.S. notes.
Exactly. And one other quick item, and I'll let you go. Let's get
yep.
some more callers. My great state of Oklahoma is on the verge of being the first state to pass a 10th Amendment law in the state legislature telling
mm-hmm.
federal government, we're not going to do anything that you forget your mandates, forget your stuff. If it's beyond the Constitution and outside of what your powers and duties are, we will not respect it. We will not abide by it.
Well, that is certainly significant. I know there's some 28 states that are already looking to do the same thing. Hawaii is one of them. I know they've already passed one bill along those lines. I don't know how comprehensive it was. And where this is going to get into a conflict is with this national service thing that they're trying to start, because that's a direct violation of the 13th Amendment against
right.
involuntary servitude.
Believe me, I know.
Yeah.
I was almost drafted.
Yeah.
But I joined to get ahead of it.
The situation is that if these states pass these resolutions, national service cannot be enforced inside their boundaries, and at that point we will see there'll be a conflict and there'll be a crisis.
Exactly. It will be interesting to see how that all shakes out.
Yes, it certainly will.
And now with that, I'll let you go.
All right, thanks an awful lot, because we're at the end of the segment here, and the other caller is gone now. So we're going to stop here. And before we go, real quick, a listener wrote in the other day, because I keep mentioning that the U.S. tax code under Bush did work to send jobs overseas, and somebody said, well, we don't know where it is in the tax code. Can you provide it? So I did put up a link at whatreallyhappened.com today called Flashback, Does the Tax Code Send U.S. Jobs Offshore? And it details exactly the mechanism by which the Bush tax cut did, in fact, encourage corporations to send jobs to other countries. And Barack Obama says he's going to close that tax loophole, but he's not doing anything to encourage these companies to bring the jobs back. And again, there is nothing you can do that's going to fix the economy unless it's putting money into the hands of the working and middle-class people. That has to be done. Everything else is just creative bookkeeping. We're going to take a break here. If you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And band Aloha America. It's a wonderful song. Can't make it here anymore. We have another caller waiting on the line. Before we get to him, though, just a real quick story. We've been hearing for months on end all these newspaper articles about, you know, oh, Iran is a terrible, terrible nuclear threat because, well, yes, they're only building a power station, but who knows what they might do with that material somewhere down the road. And they keep trying to really make this as this huge, huge, huge danger. Well, it turns out that we can forget about the danger from Iran. Not that it ever really existed, but it's now trivial because auditors have found that the United States Department of Energy cannot account for its own nuclear materials in 15 locations. That's 15 out of 40 facilities came up short in an inventory of their nuclear materials. That's 37% of U.S. nuclear facilities can't find these radioactive materials they're supposed to have. And rather than try and go search for them, the U.S. Department of Energy just wrote them off and said, oh, well, it's no big deal. And the materials included some 20,000 grams of enriched uranium. They're not saying to what extent it was enriched, whether it was reactor fuel or bomb fuel. 45 grams of plutonium. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a lot, and it isn't really until you remember that plutonium is very flammable. And 45 grams of plutonium set on fire and turned into smoke and released in an inner city area, that's going to cause some real problems. 5,000 kilograms of uranium has gone missing, and 189,000 kilograms of depleted uranium. Now, admittedly, pure uranium, and especially the depleted uranium, aren't that big of a deal radiologically. You can't make dirty bombs out of them. But this idea that 20,000 grams of enriched uranium has gone unaccounted for, I mean, this is absolutely shocking. I mean, the United States is not in a position to be criticizing Iran for how they're handling their nuclear materials when volumes of these very dangerous radioactive materials are just, they've gone walkabout. Nobody knows where they went. Maybe they wound up in Israel. The point is, we don't know. We don't know. And so the United States is not in a position to be casting aspersions on Iran's nuclear program when we have got this volume of dangerous materials completely missing from under our own facilities here. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Rob in Minnesota. Aloha, Rob. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hi, Mike. I was going to talk about something else, but with that, it's kind of a things that make you go, hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Iran has all of this oil, they're sitting on this vast lake of oil. Why is it that they're spending their money on a nuclear reactor when they don't have any gasoline refineries? Wouldn't it make more sense for them to be spending their money on oil refineries? And it kind of makes you wonder, you know, if, you know, I mean, they've got their hand on the dipstick, so to speak. They know how much oil is underneath them. So, you know, if they have all this unlimited amount of oil, wouldn't they be, you know, wouldn't they be more well advised to be building oil refineries?
Well, not really, because they sell their oil to other people who've got refineries. I mean, they've been selling their oil to Russia. They were selling their oil to the United States. They sell their oil. That's why they're building a nuclear power station. They know the oil is worth more to them being sold outside the border. And they also know that the oil is going to run out eventually. It's not an infinite supply. And Iran is taking the money that they're making from their oil sales, and they're investing it in alternative energy futures because they know it's going to run out sometime.
Well, that was my point, is that it's going to run out at some time.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the bottom line is, under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, not only is the United States required to allow Iran to build power stations, we're supposed to be helping them do it. If the United States is really so worried that Iran might be doing something illegal with their power station, let's go in, comply with Article 4 of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and help them build the power station. That way we know what it is. We know what's in there. And the only reason our government isn't doing it is because it's got nothing to do with nuclear power and reactors. It's just another excuse to invade somebody else's country again.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, the reason I called with something completely different. I got another indication that Tom Clancy is trying to be the mighty Karnak here.
Mm-hmm.
I got a thing in my In my email, it says the Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon's Advanced Warfighter 2 Xbox 360. And anyway, here's the description. The ghosts are back. 2014, and the soldiers of the future return to encounter a new and more imminent threat along the recently completed wall of the U.S.-Mexico border. Isn't that great?
That's amazing. Well, we know that Tom Clancy, you know, gets a lot of his inspiration from, you know, wargaming that goes on, you know, inside the U.S. military. And I commented over the weekend that one of his earlier books that I like, The Cardinal of the Kremlin, a big part of the story takes place at this secret Russian facility in Tajikistan near Dushanbe. And now with Google Earth, you can go in and actually take a close look at it. And it's exactly as was described in Tom Clancy's book. Now, I don't think it does what Tom Clancy said it did in the book, but the idea that he had this kind of detailed information about what was at that time a Soviet facility indicates that Tom's got some inside informational sources. And I like a lot of the wargaming that he's done in his books. I kind of stopped liking his books with Executive Action because then it started getting a little bit too far out there, I felt. But yes, a lot of his stories are drawn from real-life wargame scenario. And, this whole idea that everybody's starting to put walls up and everything, I think it's a giant step backward. You know, everyone's trying to go back to Cold War.
They're conditioning the soldiers of the future, apparently. So.
Yeah, between that and I think a lot of these computer games are designed to train people to be soldiers and to obey orders. And
absolutely.
You know, it's
I got
chilling.
One more thing, just quick. It's kind of
okay.
Just kind of popped into my mind. And, you know, the whole Mad Max, series. And
yeah,
you remember
the Dystopian
Beyond
Society.
What's that?
The Dystopian series, yeah.
Right. And you remember Beyond Thunderdome?
Oh, of course.
And there's a creature in there, or a composite of creatures, called Master Blaster. And who
yes.
does that remind you of?
Who does it remind you of?
Well, I was kind of thinking Israel, the United States, but you can.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, very much so. The big, dumb, strong brute and the little tiny brain riding on top of him. And unfortunately, I think, you know, a lot of people are realizing with the United States as fragile as it is, you know, because in the movie, blowing this high-pitched whistle paralyzed the big, strong brute. And I think if anybody really decides it's time to bring down the U.S.-Israel pair, that they're going to find it easier to do by wrecking the U.S. economy. And, you know, we're so close and so fragile right now. I mean, if the American people just got fed up with this whole thing and said, I'm not going to work for the next 2 months, I mean, that would bring it all to a crashing halt.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for me, Mike. Thanks a bunch. You're doing a great job.
All right, thanks an awful lot. Thank you for tuning in, and tell all your friends about this show. We're trying to get more and more stations to join our little ohana here and get the word out. So thanks an awful lot, Rob. All righty. Now then, we're almost to the end here, and I want to go back to this story about the anthrax. No, I'll tell you what. We're going to save that one for the next segment. I got a real short story here. Apparently, a 28-year-old man died from an overdose of Viagra. Apparently, he had these two ladies, and he made this bet that he could keep them happy for 12 hours straight nonstop. And he lost the bet by dying partway through. And I'm just imagining, like, you know, him being up at the pearly gates and trying to explain what happened, and St. Peter saying, no, come on, seriously, how did you really die? I'm not going to let you in here until you tell me the truth. And the guy said, no, I had the Viagra. Anyway, just a little bit of silliness there. Another one for the Darwin Awards list, I think. We're going to take another break. 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Donovan is answering the phones today. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
Tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. We're going to set the Wayback Machine back to 2001 in the immediate aftermath of the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, when various media institutions and the U.S. Congress were receiving these letters with these very crudely written messages inside that were very obviously designed to appear to be from semi-literate, fanatical Muslim terrorists. We know over the course of the years since then that the FBI has thrashed around attempting to first of all frame Dr. Stephen Hatfill, then later on this Egyptian scientist from the Fort Detrick Labs, and I'm blanking on his name, but he was in their sights for a while, and then finally settling on Bruce Ivins as the likely culprit in the anthrax letters, all the more convenient because Bruce Ivins conveniently died and was unable to defend himself against the FBI accusations, even though all of his friends and coworkers were saying, no, it couldn't possibly be him. The FBI said, yes, it was him. Case closed. We don't need to look any further for the anthrax suspect. Well, the Sandia National Laboratories, and they've probably endangered next year's funding because of this, but they ran a very sophisticated analysis on the anthrax samples removed from Bruce Ivins' laboratory and the samples taken from the letters themselves, and discovered that there are very slight differences between them. And their conclusion is that the anthrax in the letters, while it is the same strain as the sample from the Fort Detrick Laboratories, that it probably came from a different lab because of the contaminants involved. Now, all of this goes back to the fact that there was a real suspect, has been a real suspect, all along. All along. By the name of Dr. Philip Zack. Now, he was working at Fort Detrick. He worked with Bruce Ivins. And the security system in the lab where the anthrax was kept detected Dr. Philip Zack entering the lab late at night without authorization after Dr. Zack had lost his job at Fort Detrick over a racially motivated attack on an Egyptian co-worker. Oddly enough, the same Egyptian scientist who was later on a target for the FBI's investigation. And with all of the focus on Dr. Stephen Hatfill and Bruce Ivins and everybody, it is very obvious that the FBI went out of its way to go nowhere near Dr. Philip Zack. And it's starting to look an awful lot like how the SEC, despite very obvious evidence of wrongdoing, stayed away from Bernie Madoff. And the way FINRA stayed away from Alan Stanford. The instruments of our government that we pay taxes to enforce the laws and our safety, are covering up and protecting the actual perpetrators for years and years on end. I don't know about you, this is not what I pay taxes for. But it's obvious that once again, the FBI framed an innocent party. The evidence is continuing to prove that Bruce Ivins was not the anthrax letters perpetrator, and yet the one suspect that actually was caught on the security system going into the lab has never been investigated, never been talked to, never been questioned. He's working at another U.S. government lab. He still has a security clearance. Very, very suspicious what's going on there and why certain segments of our society seem to be above investigation, immune, protected, the untouchables, if you will. It's what David Ferry used to describe Clay Shaw back during the Kennedy assassination aftermath. Clay Shaw was an untouchable. That wasn't true. He died rather mysteriously as soon as the trial, Jim Garrison's trial, even though he was acquitted, he died almost immediately thereafter. Anyway, turning back to the world of science, we're going to cover one more story here for the remainder of today. They're calling it the Big Bang Race. As you know, over in Europe, they're building this large Hadron Collider. And, actually, we do have a caller on the line, so I'm going to put this story off until tomorrow. Chris in Victoria. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, great to be on the show. I love your show.
Thank you.
I started listening to you on Alex Jones, and then I recently started downloading your podcast, so it's really enjoyable. And I'm calling because both you and Alex think that global warming is a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was legit, and then I thought it was a fraud myself. And the more I start looking at it, the more I think it actually is anthropogenic, that it is caused by humans. And I'll tell you why I think so, and you can tell me where you think I'm off the mark.
Mm-hmm.
What I found confusing is, say, Alex Jones would have somebody on his show who was saying that it's definitely not caused by humans. And, you know, I'd research them, look at their paper, whatever, and then I could find someone who disagreed with them. And it just seemed that I just lacked the ability to really kind of make the determination based on the science. It was really difficult to do it that way. And when I looked at credibility, I couldn't figure out who was more credible. It seemed to me that I didn't know where Alex was coming from with had such certainty that it was a fraud. And I have to say, I don't see where you have that certainty yourself. My brother's a Harvard physicist, and you know, I respect my brother. He's a bright guy, and he's certain that it is caused by humans. But anyway, what convinced me, the science that convinced me, is that the carbon that is in excess, that is spiking, can be accounted for in two ways. That they know that the particular configuration of the carbon comes from fossil fuels, number one. And number two, just the amount of fuel that's being burned, we can keep track of that. So we can say that it isn't just coming out of the oceans because the sun is heating up. We can say that, you know, indeed, we are making this extra carbon. And the other thing is that, you know, the great global warming hoax, that film?
Mm-hmm.
You refer to? Well, from what I've been reading is that scientists really never were saying, maybe Al Gore was, but other scientists were never really saying that the carbon precedes the, you know, help me out here. They've got it kind of backwards, right?
Okay, let me cut in here a little bit because you brought up another topic, and we're almost at the end of the show here. Yeah, the problem here is that the global warming, the human-caused global warming people, what they're doing, this is a common political trick, they're taking something that happens naturally, the Earth getting colder, the Earth getting warmer, and they're trying to turn it into a crisis with which they can extract money and more control over our lives with. And the bottom line is that there's a lot of very flawed science in the global warming debate. Now, the one you were just talking about, they've done some ice core studies, and they showed that the Earth's temperature and carbon dioxide were going up and down together over the last several hundred thousand years, and this data is actually correct. The problem is, the ice cores, what they actually show was the Earth got warmer, then the carbon dioxide increased.
Right. Now, this is the response to that criticism. The scientists are saying, you know what, we never were holding that position. We were saying, yeah, that's true. The carbon actually drove it, and then you get a biofeedback loop where it ends up increasing because it's, you know.
If you're showing the temperature rise first and then the carbon dioxide increases, you're not seeing that initial carbon dioxide presentation to cause that. What you've got, there's a lot of money invested in global warming. And scientists are just like anybody else. I mean, just because somebody's a scientist doesn't make them any more honorable than a politician. You know, science.
I would disagree because that I know, because my brother, since I've been young.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time here. Let me just finish with one thought here, because, I mean, the major embarrassment is they've been screaming that the ice cover is retreating due to global warming. They just found out the satellites and sensors were in error, and they missed a chunk of ice like the size of Texas up there. And in actual point of fact, the ice cover is growing on the Arctic. And it was an instrumentation goof. We're seeing their temperature sensors are sighted next to air conditioners. I've got a photo of one of these temperature sensors sitting right next to a trash incinerator. I wonder why they're getting warmer numbers. We're at the end of the show. If you want to talk about this, we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, aloha, America.